Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. And this is the official Lions podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, we are rolling towards the NFL draft, which is two Thursdays from now. For those who are listening, now would be Sunday, April 14th. And we're going to talk about the defense today because we talked about the offense last week. So we're going to talk about defensive draft prospects. But first, there's a couple roster moves that we got to cover. The main one, the number one, is the number two quarterback, Tom Savage, being brought in.
Yeah, it's not an exciting move, but it's a move that was necessary. They said that they wanted to add a veteran quarterback, and he has ties to the coaching staff. Played his best football under Sean Ryan when he was with the Texans. That's when he was a starter for them. And, you know, he's not going to move the needle for a lot of guys, but he's arguably better than the backup situation we had last year. So,
Still not great. Still not a quality backup quarterback.
Yeah, but, you know, I think, as we talked about last week, they're probably I still can envision them taking a quarterback in this draft class. And now with Savage, now with Cook, you've got more competition than you've had in the past. I know there's people that want somebody that is good enough to push Stafford as in, you know, for a starting job or at least push him to be better. You know, the quarterback position doesn't really work like that. You either have a guy, like, if you have two good quarterbacks, you don't have a quarterback. You know, that's the old college rule. Right? And there's not. There's barely 32 starting NFL quarterbacks.
It's an amazing fact.
Right. And so to try and get another 32 that can push guys that can push those 32, it's hard and you pay for it. And if you want to get a guy that can draft Stafford, well, you're going to use a day two pick on it or maybe even a day one pick on it. And people aren't going to be excited about that for a guy who is, you know.
Unless they really hate Stafford.
Correct. So, yeah, so it is what it is. It's a move, but it shouldn't preclude them from still addressing the position, you know, a week and a half from now.
All right, so the other move was special teamer Charles Washington signed his exclusive rights free agent contract.
Yeah, you know, his third year in the league here, and was originally brought in during the days with Jim Caldwell. With Caldwell and Terrell Austin's system, he saw some field on defense, saw some playing time on defense, did not get that opportunity with this coaching staff, but they do like his special teams work where he did get a lot more playing time. I think he was the third most on the team behind Killebrew and Bowden. Oh, no, not Bowden. Belor. And so with Belor no longer there, this is arguably your second most important special teams player outside of the kickers and snappers, right? So that's a nice move to bring him back. He's a good locker room guy. The DBs love him. So it's nice to have Chuck around.
All right. Here we've got a couple of we're going to lead off with a few questions. First from the Bood Abides. Which position groups have the largest number of top 10 prospects? Not who will go in the top 10, but have the talent to be top 10 players long term.
You know, it's really the defensive line, and that includes both the interior guys and the exterior guys. Excuse me. You could argue that Jeffrey Simmons is a fringe top 10 guy, but there's, you know, you can argue maybe Jerry Tillery should be up in that range, maybe even Christian Wilkinson.
Really, Jeffrey Tillery.
You could argue it that long term, his potential is there. He won't go in the top 10 because he's still inconsistent. But you could argue that his range is up there long term.
Jerry.
Ed Oliver is, in my opinion, he's a lock there. Quinnen Williams is a lock there. And then on the edge, you got Bosa, Gary, and then you have people who love Sweat there, people who love Brian Burns there, obviously Josh Allen. And I mean, right there, that's almost 10 guys. You know what I mean? And we haven't even talked about anything else. So, all of those guys are really the kind of cream of the crop. So the largest position is definitely up front on that defensive line. It's a big reason why a team like the Lions, who has set themselves up to take the best player available, why they keep getting those edge rushers, you know, plugged into them in mock drafts.
All right. Robert Canfield asks, which position drops off the farthest in terms of talent on defense from the top 10 to days 2 and 3?
Well, that's the trick, right? I mean, it's you could argue that it's this that the edge has the biggest drop off from the top 10 guys to the day 2 and 3 guys.
No, off the ball linebackers.
But well, yeah, okay, I could agree with that too, because there might not even be day 2 off the ball linebackers. There might be one or two of them. Linebacker is a relatively weak position overall. Maybe 4 or 5 guys might go. You could say the same thing with running back. I don't even know if there's a top 10 necessarily running back guy. But the depth of this class is really in rounds 2 and 3. So really the drop-off is going to be after pick 100, regardless of position. So, yeah, you know, linebacker I think is a good choice for you've got the two Devins. And then you're maybe pushing to a couple other guys that we'll get into when we get to this the linebacker section. And then, yeah, it's a lot of day 3 guys after that.
All right. Daniel Cornell asks, how much weight, if any, does the PFF grade on players count toward their evaluation?
Now, it's not part of the QIB process, but it is part of the team's process. And not all teams utilize PFF, but I know the Lions do. It started under previous management with Mayhew, when they had Gunther Cunningham being their point person, and the Lions have continued that with Quinn, and I think Quinn's a little bit more involved. I don't know if there's a point person like there was with Gunther in this current regime, but they evaluate it. They can there's a whole different realm of things that PFF does for the NFL teams that they don't do for the Lions, that they don't do for the general public. And that's because the Lions pay them a considerable amount of money to do that, or other NFL teams do, right? So they can get specific breakdowns when players, their success when they play specific spots, how many snaps they get on the field, and there's these incredible amount of details that go into it. So they utilize that as part of their evaluation process. Now, how much weight? I don't know how much weight it really goes into it. It might vary by position, or it might not even be that much at all, but it's all part of the process. Watching film, doing interviews, doing background checks, having psychological evaluations, looking at locker room chemistry, athletic comps like the QIB system. All of these things factor into one overall evaluation, but there's a litany of things that go in, and the PFF is a part of that.
All right, now we're going to dig into the QIB system. As you've mentioned before, we're going to go through all the entire defense. We're breaking it down a little bit deeper than we did the offense just because of how the defensive line and outside linebacker positions are utilized on this roster. So we're going to start at nose tackle. We're going to work from the inside out. So currently we have Snacks Harrison.
Mm-hmm. And John Aikens.
Yeah. And what type of guys would we be looking at in the draft?
So from an athletic QIB standpoint, starting with the nose tackles, both Harrison and Aikens, Their athletic profiles are pretty terrible. I mean, like I gave them this kind of light blue. You can see on there.
That's big guys.
Yeah, yeah, and you don't expect them to be big testers, but they test at a level where pretty much every defensive lineman in the class qualifies for their level. So there's not really a QIB specific to the comparison. Nose tackles. Yeah. So instead, what I did was, I looked at guys who can match at least one of the athletic parameters of a defensive tackle, and then guys that should project as nose tackles in the NFL. So the guy right off the top is Dexter Lawrence. He's going to be your top pure nose tackle in this class. Could go in the first round. Probably should go in the first round. It's a little bit rare for nose tackles to go that high, but we've seen this trending the last few years that these athletic nose tackles can go. I think Lawrence would be a guy who is going to get in there probably in the late 20s, and somebody's going to grab him and see what they can do. When we slip into day two, Kalen Saunders from Western Illinois, we've talked about him before. He has a really good short shuttle, like good enough to be as a guy who can play on the edge You know, like in a 3-4, like a 5 technique. So he can get all the way out to the 5 from an athletic standpoint. But he's more of a pure guy. He's gonna probably find a home at the 1 technique as opposed to the 0, which is like right over the 0 is right over the nose. The 1 is adjacent, so he's gonna slide more into like a gap, like a single gap type defense, I think. But he's an interesting guy, and he hits a couple of those athletic markers that are very interesting. Then after that, it's day 3, right? Daylon Mack out of Texas A&M can play the 0. If there's a Damon Harrison clone in this class, Daylon Mack is that.
Really?
He's short. He's got some pretty significant weight on him and some power. Can play the 0, the 1. You could probably even kick him out to the 3 a little bit. From an athletic standpoint, they match pretty close. Mack is actually slightly more athletic, but Snacks is a little bit stronger, which is, again, no surprise. Snacks is a beast there. But if they're going to add a nose tackle and they're going to wait on until day 3, Daylon Mack makes a lot of sense to me because they can get him at a relatively cheap price. He matches a lot of what you can get out of Snacks, and he could help in your rotation pretty much, you know, right off the bat.
All right. Now we're going to slide over to the 3 technique, 5 technique, which basically is A'shaun Robinson.
Yeah, and there's a handful of guys here that fit into this system as well. Jeffrey Simmons, who I mentioned at the top, is a guy who didn't test because he has an ACL, but athletically he probably would have done very well. He's a guy who could still go in the top 10 despite his ACL. Didn't make the combine because of a fight he got in high school, right? Pretty ugly fight, but he was defending his sister and he punched a woman, and this was apparently...
It might get you held out of the combine.
Yeah, and apparently in the last 4 years, he's been a model citizen and he's done things to, rehab his image and talk about... And he's volunteered in situations to go against this mistake that he made. So he's got a guy who has the potential to overcome this from a character standpoint.
He's the classic guy that's going to be drafted by the Steelers or the Patriots and then be fantastic.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And then on the opposite side of him, on the opposite side of the ball is Christian Wilkins, who is a model citizen. He is the academic. He won the academic Heisman last year. He's a 2-time captain at Clemson. He can play 3 technique well. He's
odd for a defensive player. They usually save that for offensive linemen.
What's that?
The academic Heisman.
He's a extraordinarily high character guy, but his talent isn't quite at the level, and so he's going to slide a little bit. I still think he's going to go in the first round. I don't know if he'll go, as like I said, in that top half of round 1, but this is a guy who, when you're looking at a team like the Lions, who really embrace character, this guy has it in spades. But if they think they're going to move on from A'shaun, maybe they trade back and they take a gamble and Christian Wilkins is in play. But if you're not going to move on from A'shaun, or if you think Hand is a could, you know, basically replace A'shaun next year, I think it might just be two ships that pass in the night type of thing. But Wilkins has a lot of really neat intangibles that the Lions would like. I just don't think he has the positional range to appeal to them. He's a full quib qualifier. The other two full quib qualifiers at this spot is Rennell Wren from Arizona State. He played the 0, but he's probably going to be better at the 3 technique or the 1 technique. He's more like A'shaun, where he's a big run stuffer. Met with the Lions at the combine. The Lions went to his pro day. And so he's a guy who, if he's there on day 3, they could be interested in maybe in the 4th round. Could be a guy that they go up on, they try and take at the back end around 3. Tristan Hill is another one who was a nose tackle in college, but projects out a little bit more. Loads of athleticism from both these guys, but there's just inconsistencies in their game. I have Wren ranked ahead of Hill on my board right now. And then that's about it. You know, the full guys are those are your main full guys. And the day three ones make, again, more sense because of the depth at your position. But Christian Wilkins is an interesting name that, you know, we don't really talk about a whole lot.
All right, moving on to big defensive end, and that's not Big Ten defensive end. It's not spelled B1G. This is spelled B-I-G. And this is where we have Deshaun Hand on the roster.
Yeah, so this is an athletic interior defensive tackle who can also play as an anchor defensive end in this scheme. So when they want to go four down defensive linemen, he becomes a defensive end. But when they stick with their typical three down defensive linemen, this is the guy that also can play at the three technique when A'Shaun needs a rep off, but he can also play at the nose tackle spot when they want to go to like their NASCAR passing situation type defense. So this Deshaun Hand is the you can play everywhere from the 7 to the 0. And so there's a lot more guys actually that fit into this category because this is a good athletic defensive class. Quinton Williams is at the top. He didn't run the short shuttle, but based on everything we know about him, he probably would have blown that out of the water. He would, and if he, because he didn't do that, he was technically a partial quib, but I think we pretty much could include him as a full if we, you know, if he actually did that drill. The next guy, Ed Oliver, right? We've talked about him at length, about all of the intangibles he has. Jerry Tillery, who I just brought up, is, again, I think he could sneak into the first round because of his athleticism. He has, like, some serious Deshaun Hand-like agility, and he's just got to work on some of his past stuff. Then when we drift into day two a little bit more, this is still a position that I think is going to be in play more on day two than the other two because of the flexibility that the position provides. So a guy like LJ Collier from TCU, the Lions did a private workout with him, then they brought him in for a top 30 visit. He's a guy who is a natural defensive end who can play that big spot. He can also kick inside. So he's going to be remind you a little bit of like a Trey Flowers type. But he would probably live in Deshaun Hand's world instead of Flowers based on the roster structure and where I think his future is, just because he lacks a little bit of that short shuttle twitchiness that you want from that weak side defensive end spot. So I like him at the strong side defensive end. I like him pushing inside. He would be a nice pairing with A'Shaun, really allow them to go big in certain situations. I'm not a big fan of Draymond Jones. Now, he's a full qualifier. He played at Ohio State at the three technique, but he didn't test very well from as an interior guy, but he tested better as an outside guy. He's also really light at 281. I don't like that he's not very good at run defense. So I think he's a guy that the Lions would not take a look at. Next guy's Charles Omenihue from Texas. Just like Collier, good strong side defensive end that could also kick inside to the three technique. He has a little bit more positional range. He's just not as polished as Collier. He's a guy I think they could get in maybe around 3, maybe slides around 4. Kingsley Keke, kind of that same scenario. He's from Texas A&M, so another Texas A&M lineman that would fit this system. John Kaminsky from Charleston. I saw a rap sheet saying he could go in the first round, which is
wow,
a bit ludicrous to me. I have him as a day three guy, but you know, everybody's a first rounder on rap sheets, radar, I guess. He talks about everybody like they're the second coming of somebody. But he's a talented guy. I mean, don't get me wrong. He's a small school guy. There's going to be a big learning curve, but he's 6'5 and 286. He can play that and fit in that same pattern as Collier and Omenihue. Daniel Wise and Jonathan Ledbetter, those are guys who they have some familiarity with because of like who they're related to. Wise has a brother that played at it plays in New England, and he was drafted when Patricia was there. And then Ledbetter was drafted by the Lions but didn't fit out. I think they're cousins, if I'm not mistaken. Both guys, I think, could fit into this similar type role. And then there's a handful of other guys. Dogby from Temple, Cortez Broughton from Cincy. These are more late round, maybe even undrafted type guys who could fit into the same type of depth role.
All right, moving on to some questions. Woodsy asks, Which prospects for the eighth pick would you consider to love football, capital love? True football guys that eat and drink and obsess about it. Guys like Rashawn Gary seem to not fit this mold and I believe would be lower on the Lions draft board.
It's a hard question, right? Because we don't know. We're not in interviews with these guys, and we're just getting like secondhand information. It's hard to really even say with Rashawn Gary how much he loves football, but when you look at some of the stuff he's doing, like creating his own sports agency and stuff, that's kind of Ndamukong Suh-esque, right?
Yeah.
And he's always been questioned about his love of football. Go ahead.
Well, I'd beg to say, like, this is an interesting question because when you talk about the eighth pick, Ndamukong Suh was the number two overall pick. Barry Sanders was number three overall pick. Those were guys that didn't seemingly, you know, love football. You know, and you can argue that Barry did, but at the same time, it was easy for him to walk away from the game. And you can kind of tell that Sue only cares about Sue. He doesn't really care about football. Right. It doesn't make a difference. But these guys are top three picks, top of the draft type guys. Mm-hmm. And usually their talent can overcome for all of that. Whereas the eighth pick, now you get into a little bit of a region where they're not a number one or two guy. This is a guy who's got great athletic ability, but if he doesn't love football, he might not make it. So, I don't know. This is a good question by Woodsy, and I agree with you. We really don't know. Like, we either really know or we don't know at all.
Yeah, you know, and I sectioned it here because I wanted to bring up the point about Sue, and also I wanted to bring up the thing about Ed Oliver, where people were questioning his commitment to the game when he got so there's three guys last year in college football who got injured, and each one of them, their character was brought under the microscope. Bosa, Gary, and Oliver, and all three of them were missing games, and people were saying, ah, they're not hurt, they're just saving themselves for the draft, they think they're going to be top 10 picks, and so blah blah blah. That's fine, but really that's an opinion, and it's an opinion that has kind of taken off into this narrative on these three guys. And I don't necessarily agree with it. You could read into it, but like I said, we're never going to know whether or not
we'll know when it's too late.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
All right. Craig Gallagher asks, Bob Quinn has only taken two players from a non-Power 5 school in the first three rounds. Kenny Golladay from Northern Illinois and Tracy Walker from Louisiana. Sure. So we really expect him to break the trend by selecting Ed Oliver.
You know, the big difference is that in the past you're picking in the late teens and the 20s. Now you're picking in the top 10. When you're picking in the top 10, I don't think he's going to care as much about the conference as he is about just the talent. In my opinion, I think he could break that for Oliver. I don't know if he would, though. I mean, there's a big question mark that maybe they're not as into him as, you know, with the whole talk around them maybe trading with Atlanta if he's there and blah, blah. I would take him if I'm there just because I think his talent supersedes anything else. But there are going to be other guys who we'll talk about in a little bit that will be guys that are going to be in that third round range that will go to a non-Power 5 school that will make a lot of sense.
Brett Cousineau asks, who was the highest scoring in Quib, regardless of position? Will Bob Quinn take him?
The big thing with Quib is that it's not a point system like Math Mom's Raz is, where he gives you a grade all the way to the 100th percentile. Mine is more of a, do you pass or do you not pass, and at what level do you pass? Like, and so it's... it's more like getting like an A or an A minus, and a bunch of people can get A's. It's not like it's not like a ranking system like I said with like Raz is. So I don't have like a top guy. Wait,
well, who's the guy that qualifies at the most positions? Didn't we just talk about that last week?
And that's where I was going. And Ed Oliver qualifies at five different positions fully, and that
I thought it was.
would separate him, I think, from other guys. So if you're talking about who has the most Quib positional range? It's Oliver. Will he take him? I hope so if he's there. I really do.
All right. We're going to move on to the down defensive end position, which is currently going to be anchored by Trey Flowers and Romeo Okwara.
Yeah, and the fact that we have Flowers and Okwara means that you're going to have guys... You have two guys that are both under contract next year, and because of the way their contracts are structured, you're not moving on from either of them. So you already have a two deep at this position. So if you're going to take a guy in this from the down defensive end spot, you're probably taking a guy who has positional range that you also think can stand up at the Jack linebacker position. That's one of the reasons why I think Nick Bosa could be, like, he's the top guy, right? I think if they think they can stand him up and he's there, then they would take him. I don't think he'll be there, right? Rashawn Gary, though, I think he's going to be one of the top guys there, and he might be on the board when they're there, but I think they might be less apt to take him because he fits more of the Deshaun Hand role. And I don't think you're going to stand up Rashawn Gary. And so that, he basically is Trey Flowers in my mind. A lot, Gary is a kind of a cross between Flowers and Hand. So you could take him if you think you're going to move on from Ashawn, and you think Hand is going to slide into that role, then maybe you take Rashawn Gary and you put a little weight on him and make him your big defensive end. But I don't see, if they're looking for a pass rusher, I don't think Gary's going to fit that bill. Now, the big name here that has been connected to Detroit ad nauseum is Montez Sweat. I have him listed in this group because he is a better pass rusher from his hand in the dirt. But his athletic profile just screams the ability to stand up and rush. When you watch him on film, he looks very stiff, and that can hold him back. But if the Lions think that they can mold this athletic ball of clay into an off-the-ball or an edge, stand-up edge guy like at the Jack linebacker position, Sweat makes a ton of sense. Look, he is the 14th most athletic defensive end ever, and that's ever played
evaluated at the combine,
and even going back to when they did pro, I forget how far Bathbaum goes back, but of like the, so he was the 14th ever, right? He has the number one, he's the fastest defensive end ever, like number one fastest defensive end that's ever been tested. Those are rare things. And then you add in the fact that he's 6'6", 260. His arm length, they prefer a 33, and most of the guys live in like the 34 range. His is almost 36. Arm length is huge for the Lions, and he has it in spades. He has incredible agility. He has good explosion. He has athletically screams everything they want about him. Now, he has a troubled past, going back to his time at Michigan State when he got kicked off the team. There's some concern there, but the Lions have seen him in person 3 times this year. They have met with him at the Senior Bowl. They have met with him at the Combine. They have done their homework on that. They've been going to the Mississippi State games for a couple years and doing a lot of homework. And Sweat's a big part of that. Right now, the pick could be Sweat, and if they think they can stand him up. So that's really the big question. Like I said, in my listings, and what film says is he looks like a down guy, but if they think they can stand him up, like, look, if they think they can stand Ed Oliver up, Ed Oliver could be in play, right? So I like him a lot. All right, Chase Winovich, same situation. He's a down guy, plays like a down guy, but he has a linebacker background. And when he stood him up at the combine, he looked great. He's a guy who I think if they don't take an edge in the first round, he could be there in round two. But again, he fits better as a down than he does standing up. Zach Allen from Boston College is a partial qualifier, but same scenario. He's the same scenario as Rashawn Gary. Are you going to add some weight and make him Deshaun Hand's backup because he's not quite athletic enough to hang out on that edge behind Flowers? Anthony Nelson from Iowa the same way. Max Crosby from Eastern Michigan is a guy you could potentially stand up. And then the last full qualifier is Porter Gustin from USC, who is basically like he's like Winovich, but, you know, a junior varsity version.
All right. Moving on from the down defensive end to the Jack linebacker, just to round out the group of players that basically play on the line of scrimmage on the defense. Currently, Devin Kennard anchors that role. Mm-hmm. And we also have Garrett Dooley on the roster.
Yeah, I got a futures deal. Right. So this is Josh Allen, right? If Josh Allen's there, you take him. Scott Voorhees wrote an article at Lions Wire. That said, this is how it could happen. Mm-hmm. Right. And it starts out with this, and it's a cool article. I'd check it out. But Allen's the guy because he can play Will and he can play Jack. He can do both things. He can cover off the ball and he can pass rush relentlessly. So there's so much to like about Josh Allen. I have Brian Burns in this section. Now, again, he's a guy who was more of a down defensive end, but he showed me a lot more range. I saw some things on tape. I saw a lot of agility at the combine. Burns is a guy who I put in this position. Could be in play at 8. We'll talk about him in a second a little bit more. After him, round 2 basically doesn't have anyone who qualifies. There's guys who could potentially fit in there that just haven't hit the right numbers. But then when we get into round 3, there's a couple more. Ben Benogu from TCU, he played opposite Collier at TCU. He's a guy who's specifically a pass rushing jack. He doesn't have the range to really cover right now. So he's basically what you got in Kennard, but a little less coverage skills than what Kennard has. He's a guy who I think they could take in the third if they wanted. But one of my sleepers in this draft is from Houston. It's Amike Igboule. Igboule is a guy who I think can play Jack linebacker, but he played off the ball, and I think he can also play off the ball here. He's a guy who, if you miss on Josh Allen and you really like that skill set, Igboule is the guy who I think is there. Will he be going round 3? Will he go in round 4 or even later? We'll see, but he's the guy who is really a sleeper for me right now. Then there's a handful of other guys that are on day 3 who are all partial qualifiers, and they're mostly pass rushers, but you get a little bit of that off-the-ball linebacker, Jack-type guys, and Malik Kearney, and Sutton Smith, and Malik Reed, but there's a handful of other guys that'll fit into this, but really, you know, we touched on the top guys right there.
All right, we got some questions here. Who knows, asks, if Josh Allen slides to 4th or 5th pick, will trading up for him be worth it?
4th or 5th pick is going to be a steep price to move up. If he gets to 6 now, it's a little bit more reasonable. 6 has always been my target. But I think that I think going up to 4 would be hard. You could maybe talk me into 5. But, I mean, he does everything you want. So I would be willing to trade up for him, yes.
Zach Myers asks, seeing a wide range of projections and mock drafts on where Burns will go, around where do you expect he will get drafted, and what conclusions can be drawn, if any, from his official visit with the Lions?
So here, ironically, every first-round pick that the Lions have had, none of them came to Allen Park for a visit. But every second-round pick that the Lions had came into Allen Park for a visit. So if you look at that, you could say, hey, historically, he's not going to be their first-round pick, right? But I think it changes with it being a top 10 pick. Everything that I'm hearing is that they're not as high on him as others. Now, maybe that's a smokescreen, but I think he could go into that 10 to 15 range, and maybe he's a smokescreen at 8. But I think he's a talented player, and I think he has like a Leonard Floyd upside where you can take him. I think Floyd went like at 8, right? And so I think he's a guy who, if let's say Sweat's gone and Oliver's gone and you know Josh Allen's gone, and they're like, hey, I want to walk away, maybe they trade back a couple spots and get him, or maybe they just stick there. I think anywhere from 8 to 15 makes a lot of sense for Burns because I think he has a lot of upside, that especially with the Lions.
All right, Jimmy asks, do you think Burns can keep the weight on, and do you think he can add more weight? I'm gun-shy drafting underweight players after the Jalen Reeves-Maben experiment, and I would also assume the Matt Millen experiment.
So, yes, I think Burns showed at the combine that he can play at this weight. And I know that we all think that he added weight because he was listed at 235 at Florida State. But the thing is he might have been 245 or at the combine he was 249. It's possible he's been 249 the whole time and Florida State just didn't update their roster weights. You know what I mean? Or it's possible he did gain weight. And if he did, he showed at the combine he can keep it on. Will he gain more? I don't know. He could probably, you know, these guys usually gain 5, 10 pounds.
He's going to get older.
Well,
he's
going to
put on weight as he gets older.
But the rookies also gain 5, 10 pounds in muscle getting into an NFL weight room, right? So it's possible. But look, he's 249 pounds. If you think you're going to play him at Jack, Well, Devin Kennard is 249 pounds. They're the exact same weight. So I don't think you need them to necessarily gain weight. And you know, I'm not worried about, you know, having to add weight on really any of these top guys that we're talking about.
All right, Damone asks, how would the different rotations look if the Lions draft Burns or Oliver?
So Burns, I think he would be a guy who would push behind Kennard, and I think you could get both of them on the field at times. I think you could get him maybe even ahead of Aquara at times. There's just so much positional range by adding. You could add Sweat into this as well, right? With Burns and Sweat, I think they would be utilized the same way. They can eventually, you know, push for that jack outside linebacker starting job, but they're going to start out more as a pass specialist. The Lions like to use a lot of rotation up front, and this allows them to be able to just roll guys one after another through the front six without having to do a whole lot. So, you know, I think he would be more of a chess piece. I also think they would start moving Kennard some more as well and try and get Kennard reps at other spots. You know, they can drop Kennard into a Will linebacker position at times if they wanted to get both Kennard and like a Burns or Sweat on the field at the same time. With Oliver, the sky's the limit. You can plug him and play him wherever you want. You know, your starters are going to be the down three starters are Flowers, Snacks and Ashawn, and then you have Kennard on the outside. But we all know Hand's going to play just as much as Ashawn, and we know that Aquara is still going to get his, and this is another guy that's just going to add to that mix that is going to keep it so that they can rotate 60 snaps each, or maybe, you know, a little bit more for the more athletic guys. And stay fresh and roll the whole time.
All right. Tyler Davis asks, is Montez Sweat a legit option for us at number 8? I know he's being mocked to us regularly, but seeing as he was dismissed from Michigan State and Quinn values character so much, are people overlooking that?
I don't think they're overlooking it. It's just a matter of, has he changed it? I think it's possible that it's a factor, but it's hard to tell. I know there's one writer at Lions Wire who thinks it's very much a factor, and that's why he thinks Sweat is off the board. And then another Lions Wire writer thinks that it's a non-issue because it's been settled, and he's very much in play. So I don't know. It's a very good question, but this is another one of these situations where we don't know. You know, we're not in the room, so it's hard for us to really get an idea on how much that will impact. But I do think he's in play at 8.
All right. Javon Willis asks, the opinion on Montez Sweat seems split. What are some negatives and positives of drafting Sweat? How does Sweat compare to Brian Burns? Maybe just answer that, compare Sweat to Brian Burns. We talked about everything else.
Yeah, basically Burns is a little bit more fluid, whereas Sweat is a higher upside guy, and he is able to impact the game right now. Burns, it's going to take him a little bit of time, but the ceiling looks very high for him. Whereas Sweat, he should be able to walk off the bus, make an impact day one, and then it's just a matter of are you projecting that he can stand up, which is definitely a projection at this point.
All right, Walker Kelly asks, seems like if we don't pick an edge rusher early, we won't get one until very late. Is this right?
It's hard. You know, I could pick an edge rusher in every round that I would like. It's just a matter of where you want them. Like, I would think you would take one in the first four rounds if you want a guy who's going to be impactful. But like we've said this for years now, the higher up you draft an edge rusher, the more likely they are to be successful because you're getting a more athletic edge rusher. The longer you wait, the less impactful they typically are, and I think that holds true with this class. If you're not getting Egbule, who is, again, a bit of a projection that he can be a jack pass rusher, I think after him, it's all just situational guys, and it's going to be really hard to find somebody.
All right, Rich Koenigsnecht asks, if the Lions don't draft a defensive lineman edge in the first round, who do you see as targets in later rounds?
Yeah, you know, we kind of touched on some of those guys. Here's my guess. It's going to be one of the guys who can play off the ball and stand up. So I think it would be one of these jack guys as opposed to a down defensive end. So there's a whole handful of them. I don't necessarily have a favorite.
All right, moving on to the off the ball linebacker. Now this would be Jared Davis and Christian Jones, Jalen Reeves, Maven, Steve Longa, Miles Killebrew, kind of,
yeah,
and Trey Williams.
So the Devin Bush, Devin White, those are your top two guys. Both of them qualify fully. Those are your first rounders. When you get in the second round, it's a little bit harder. Mac Wilson is really my second rounder, but he doesn't fit from an athletic standpoint, mostly because he didn't really test across the board. So it's hard to – I don't really know exactly how well he fits, but I don't think he would fit anyways. And then you get into round three, and the pickings are still kind of small. Blake Cashman would be the top guy out of that group from Minnesota. He is – he's got good potential where he could play in that Will spot challenge for starting role. But after that, it's all backup guys, right? It's Bobby Werke, Drew Tranquil. Those are more situational guys. They're probably not going to challenge Christian Jones. And so, you know, we're just talking about guys that are challenging Jalen Reeves, Maben after that. So this is the tough part about this class. If you're not taking one of the Devins, you're probably not going to take a guy who's going to be a starter. Right, you're not going to take a guy who's going to start or challenge to start. Cashman, like I said, you can make a case for it, but it gets a lot harder. I'm a little lower on this linebacker class. Other day three full qualifiers, Ben Burkeven out of Washington, Cameron Smith out of USC, though I don't like him as much. Ryan Connolly out of Wisconsin. Wisconsin guys typically fit, right? We've seen a couple of their names before already. Taki. Yeah. from BYU. He called himself a knucklehead when he was a younger player.
Yeah.
And then he ended up getting married and he
maturing up.
And then he was a captain last year. He's a guy who I think could be if they're going to take a guy on day three, he could be a bit of a sleeper guy who could play at that. Both Mike and the Will spots.
They have taken BYU linebackers before.
Correct.
All right.
So then there's another handful of guys. I'll have this article out in the next couple of days. The big ones to know that full qualifiers. Ty Summers, we've talked about in the past. Dakota Allen, Cole Holcomb, and Drew Lewis. Those are the names to know.
All right, first question's from Corey Rayburn. Do you think they're comfortable with linebacker? Do you think they'll add depth since there doesn't seem to be much of it there?
Yeah, you know, I think they might add a guy on day three. I don't think they're going to pony up one of the early guys. Oh, go ahead.
So the main man asks, what day three linebackers should I keep an eye on?
Yeah, Taki, right? The Taki from BYU, that's the sleeper guy I think would make a lot of sense. And I think they just asked me that question.
Right? Yeah, D. Hargis then asks, who is your defensive sleeper in this draft, round four at or later at any position?
Let's go back a section and say Egbule from Houston. That's the guy who, if he's there in round four, he would be my sleeper guy that I think would he'd be a lot of fun here.
All right, the next position group we're going to talk about are the cornerbacks, which include Darius Slay, which we all know very well, newcomer Justin Coleman, Rashawn Melvin, Jamal Agnew, Mike Ford, Marcus Cooper, Tease Tabor, D. Virgin, and Andre Chassier.
There's a bunch of guys. I mean, a bunch of corners. And most of them are going to go in the top 100 that are really going to be the most appealing. Byron Murphy out of Washington is probably going to be one of the top players on the Lions board. They've met with them. Justin Lane from Michigan State, they've met with them. David Long from Michigan, they've met with them. Awarie from Penn State, they've met with them, right? They've met with all these guys. They have met with Greedy. Greedy Williams from LSU, they have not met with. And he didn't fully test. And so he's not a qualifier for me yet. But you know, Jondre Baker is another guy who a lot of people are talking about at the top, but he didn't fit the system. Julian Love from Notre Dame, he does. They haven't met with him yet. JoJuan Williams and Sean Bunting are both guys that are full qualifiers that also met with them. Those are day three guys. Isaiah Johnson is more of a day three fringe guy. He's another Houston guy. Lonnie Johnson Jr. came in recently. Jamal Dean came in recently. Those are, again, kind of fringe day three. Round three, day three guys. All of them they've met with. These guys, the big thing that they've been targeting, they've been looking at got corners that are all over 6 foot one. And it makes sense when you look at the guys who are on the outside in Mathis and Cooper right now. I have a feeling they're really going to try and target a corner on day two that is 6 foot one. And that puts a lot of guys like, you know, Justin Lane and Warrior, those like I said, Williams and Bunting. A lot of these names I just mentioned are all guys that are probably going to be in that target range. Possibly David Long, because he's a little bit under. Jimmy Moreland is a guy I haven't mentioned who could be one of those sneaky guys that jumps up there that's not a 6'1". But most of the guys that I think they're going to target are 6'1".
All right, let's move on to the questions. Alex Siegel asks, can you break down the coverage scheme the Lions run in the secondary and which prospects match up well within the scheme?
Yeah, so they run man, a press man on the outside, but they do sprinkle in some zone coverages here, and then when they run three corner sets, then they will just supplement a nickel in there. But at safety, they run a single high and then a slot, and so you basically have five defensive backs on the field at all times, and your outside corners are pressing, and then your inside slot guys, typically a corner and a safety, or sometimes two safeties. Those guys are also going to be more man coverage type guys. And then your single high is your roamer. And that's what Glover Quinn was. That's what I believe Quandre Diggs will be. It's very possible that it becomes Tracy Walker. But I like Tracy a lot in the slot. We've been saying that for over a year now. So that's what they're looking for. They're looking for that's why I think they're looking at these big press guys, is because they want to put somebody opposite Slay that can muscle and then run and turn and run with somebody.
All right, Robert Canfield, Nick Ola, and Gandalf, the Honolulu Blue, all ask similar questions. I keep seeing Greedy Williams mocked to the Lions at 8, while also going in the late 20s and other mocks. Has been knocked for his tackling effort with a team of respected of good tackling defensive backs like Slay and Diggs, and an no-nonsense coach. Doesn't that seem fixable? Around what number do you see him actually getting drafted, and why has his draft stock been so different between evaluators?
You know, it's different because tackling is important at different levels to different teams. And for the Lions, it's something that is important, and that's why he isn't mocked as much to the Lions. When he is mocked, it's for people who think that it's not as significant and the Lions will overlook it. I personally don't think the Lions will overlook it, but the reason I don't think it's something that's correctable is because he doesn't show the effort for it to be correctable. He's always the last guy in. So in my opinion, he'll still go in the first round. I see him more as a guy going in the teens rather than the top 10.
All right, so Weta Patel asks, if you're Bob Quinn, what cornerback do you draft in round two?
If Justin Lane is there or a Warrior, I think I'd take either of those without hesitation. It's just a matter of will either of them be there. Those two guys would be my targets for, you know, based on reading the tea leaves.
All right, DC Waz's question. More likely outcome, Tease Tabor makes the final roster for game one of the regular season, or Tiger Woods wins a major in 2019? Seriously, though, what do you think is the most likely scenario for Tease Tabor? I'll answer part one of that question.
Go ahead.
The more likely thing is for Tiger Woods to win a major in 2019, because like 3 minutes ago, he just won the Masters. So we did the show a little late, so we already know. We're already aware.
You could have just...
Pretended
a prognosticator there.
Yeah, but I'm not a liar. All right, I'm going to be honest. I'm going to say it's going to be Tiger. Tease could still make the team. I don't think it's as likely. But what about you? Most likely scenario for Tease?
I think he's off the roster for game one. That's my guess. Yeah, I think he's going to get a shot to break out in camp. But if they add another day two corner and they have what they have on the roster, it's a long road for him.
I'd be 0% shocked if he was gone.
Yeah.
Finally, we're going to talk about safeties. We only have a couple of minutes, and First off, I should note that we've got Quandre Diggs, Tracy Walker, Tavon Wilson, Andre Adams, Charles Washington, and David Jones currently on the roster.
I thought this was a big position of need going into free agency, but when they added Coleman, that almost indicates that they're going to want to be in three corner sets more often than last year when they wanted to utilize three safety sets. And in this scenario, with three corners on the field at a time, you only have two safeties. But they also like to go to six and seven corner defensive back sets. So there's still a possibility that they go after a guy early. But it also depends on how highly they think of like guys like Adams and Wilson, who are also on the back end of that safety roster. So will they go after a guy like Garner Johnson out of Florida? He might be too rich for them. He's going to take at least a second rounder. And there's a whole bunch of other guys that do that are going to fall in that range as well that we've talked about in the past. But not a lot of guys tested, so there's limited. Taylor Rapp they brought in for a visit. I see him as he's another day two Patrick Chung type of guy who they could bring in. But are you going to spend a day two pick on a guy who isn't going to be a heavy rotational guy? So I don't know. I think you're either taking a corner on day two or a safety. And I'm leaning corner at this point right now. Darnell Savage is another guy who's a full qualifier out of Maryland. He fits more what they're looking for. I think if you're looking for a slot guy, Amani Hooker, if you're looking for a guy who, you know, is what Miles Killebrew wanted to be. Marvell Tell can play single high from USC. He's a very interesting guy. We'll see if he hangs around in the third round or if he drops into day three. I like him quite a bit. Then there's a handful of other guys that are going to be late day three guys, like Will Harris from Boston College and Andrew Wingard. These guys have some positional flexibility to play in different spots in the slot. But none of these guys play single high. And really, you have two guys that can play single high, so you don't necessarily need another safety that can play single high. So it'll really just depend on how much positional range they're looking for. The only guy who can really play... I don't have a full group qualifier that can play single high outside of the first 100 picks. So, I'll detail this position a little bit more. I just don't think I think they're going to be leaning more corner based on the roster moves that they've made and their strategy from last year.
All right, that's it. We're out of time.
Yeah, we
made it through the defense just barely.
We're gonna have wrap up quib one and we'll prep you for the draft ahead of time. So we'll make sure that we're good.
Several backup questions we'll have to get to.
Yeah, there's a whole back page of questions that were general that I say have been saving for the last couple of weeks that we'll get to. So there's still some good information that we're gonna get out to you before ahead of the draft to hopefully narrow this down a little bit more.
All right, that's it. Let's the shout-outs. We had a big movement here in the last week.
Yeah, jumped up again pretty significantly. Last week we jumped up 8. This week we jumped up 7, another 7 ratings. A lot of people saying they discovered us within the last couple of months and that they really like what they hear from us. Some nice things said about Quib this time around. Austin Simmons, TJMA, and then a 4321567.
Yeah, don't say his whole social security number.
Josie Dawn, Josh 5050, Morgan Annie, all wrote reviews this week, and we've had a lot of word of mouth put out there on social media, and other people that have said they've been told by this person or that person, and we appreciate that we're continuing to grow, and all of these help, so we appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah. They thanks everybody for the reviews, and thanks everybody in general for listening. That's going to be it for us this week. You'll hear from both of us next week. You'll hear from Eric all throughout the week, of course, if you follow him on Twitter. Or on the website, he's going to have a couple articles coming out as well.
Yep.
So that's it for today, and until next time, let's go Lions.